We are like a civilized city, and we are witnessing many uncivilized acts, in my opinion.
Both sides dig in on one of the most violent days to date in Hong Kong. This is Tuesday, November 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming up, protest around Australia after the alleged murder in police custody of an Aboriginal man by a police officer in that country's Northern Territory. You'll hear why apples are now a rare commodity in a controversial South Asian location. It all comes your way on VOA Asia. The president of the Polytechnic University under siege in Hong Kong has said he has brokered a truce with police that would allow the hundreds of protesters trapped inside the campus to leave peacefully. Teng Jin Guang Teng said he received assurances from police for a temporary suspension of the use of force if the protesters do not initiate the violence. He said, "We've also received permission from the police for you to leave the campus peacefully, and I will personally accompany you to the police station to ensure that your case will be fairly processed." It's unclear whether and when the truce ever took effect. Meanwhile, dozens of student protesters in Hong Kong had made another frantic attempt to escape the university that's been surrounded by riot police as the siege on the campus entered a second day. VOA's Bill Gallo is there, and he reports from Hong Kong.
Waves of students fleeing on foot from the Hong Kong Polytechnic University, running through clouds of tear gas as they tried to break police lines. It was the second concerted attempt by students to flee the urban campus, which has been surrounded by police who have repeatedly warned they will use lethal force. Riot police chased down students, some of whom were covered in blood. It wasn't clear how many have escaped the campus successfully. The clashes raised fears that the siege would end in a bloody crackdown. Students barricaded themselves on the campus and several others across Hong Kong early last week, stockpiling homemade weapons such as petrol bombs, slingshots, and bricks. Police have tried to break through protester barricades, but were driven back by the protesters. Early Monday, VOA saw police arrest dozens of students who were detained with plastic wire ties around their wrists. Some were marched in front of reporters as they were taken away towards waiting police vans. Ronald is a Hong Konger who says he supports the students.
And I can't imagine it is happening in Hong Kong. We are like a civilized city, and we are witnessing many uncivilized acts, in my opinion. Like, you're arresting someone without any weapons, or many things that are beyond description, I think. Yeah. They think the most violent group of people is inside, but in my opinion, they are not really violent. They are just acting in response to the police force.
Thousands of riot and other police have surrounded the campus of the Hong Kong Polytechnic University for the past day, warning students to drop their weapons. But a hardcore group shows no signs of surrender. A student protester who was in contact with friends inside the campus told VOA that as many as several hundred more may be present. The clashes are some of the worst violence since anti-government protests began in Hong Kong 5 months ago. The students are calling for democratic reforms in the semi-autonomous Chinese territory. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
As the Hong Kong protests continue, what lies ahead for that city? Stay with us on VOA Asia. We'll talk with someone who might have some answers. These are the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The United States is urging Sri Lanka's new president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, to uphold commitments to reform the security sector and to ensure human rights and accountability. Malaysia is edging toward a new deal with Bangladesh to lift a ban imposed on migrant workers from Bangladesh more than a year ago over concerns that recruitment agencies were driving them into forced labor. China refutes a New York Times report on leaked documents detailing the Chinese government's crackdown on Muslim people in its Xinjiang region. Hong Kong's High Court strikes down a face mask ban aimed at protesters trying to hide their identity to avoid arrest. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. As the protest in Hong Kong approach the half-year mark, the question arises, where does this go from here? We welcome to VOA Professor Lynette Ong, a noted expert on China issues at the University of Toronto in Canada. Lynette, thanks for doing this and speaking with us. Monday might have been the most violent day these days of protests have seen. How much further can this go on, do you think?
So it looks like both sides are ratcheting up the violence. Police are trying to crack down on the protesters, and then the protesters, the radical ones, do not seem to be giving in to the pressure. So if that's the logic, I think we may actually see more violence and more casualties in the days to come.
Is there any way you can see out of this?
From what we know, Hong Kong government Carrie Lam has said time and again that it will not tolerate violence from the protesters. Beijing seems to be quite resolved in cracking down the movement as well. Difficult to see a way out unless there's miraculously there are some mediators. But in this day and age, I think it's quite difficult to imagine anyone who could actually step in and mediate the situation.
Can you imagine this going on, and what would happen overall in time to the city of Hong Kong? It couldn't be the same city again, could it?
No, it wouldn't be the same city again. Even right now, as we speak, I'm sure Hong Kong today is different from Hong Kong 5-6 months ago, right? I think the society has really been very fragmentized. Divided into various groups depending on what dialect you speak, which part of China did you originally come from, and a lot of intense animosity between groups, which is very unfortunate. And then Hong Kong's role as an international financial capital hub, I think that is also coming under question too. But if China has the intention to replace Hong Kong with another Chinese city, I think that will not happen anytime soon, because Hong Kong thrives because of the rule of law. Shanghai and Shenzhen or any Chinese cities will not be able to replace that role that easily.
The Chinese government, Beijing, seems to be ramping up their what they are saying, as you said earlier. In fact, the Chinese ambassador to the UK said Monday that foreign countries, including the US and Britain, should stop interfering in Hong Kong's internal affairs, and basically laid out what was almost could be considered a threat line. I mean, are they really steeling themselves, do you think, for some kind of movement into Hong Kong?
No, I know any suggestions of foreign interference, I think, is really quite ridiculous, but also not entirely surprising, because Beijing always blame any sort of domestic chaos on the black hand from foreign countries. We see that rhetoric playing out in Xinjiang as well. But this is a situation that, you know, the authorities are not used to, and the only way they know how to approach this sort of situation is to crack down hard on the protesters.
But you don't expect that to happen. For what reasons?
Well, because I think, any sort of repression comes with cost. And right now, Hong Kong government is bearing the cost of repression. Condemnation is borne by Hong Kong government. And if Beijing can get that sort of strategy working, there's no reason why it should send its own troops to Hong Kong, to the street of Hong Kong, then it would be receiving international condemnation.
Well, the way things are going, and what you just said earlier in this conversation, is that you can't see an end to this, but there has to be some end. What kind of support is either, you know, carrying forward or moving backward as far as Chinese Hong Kong civilian support is concerned for the protesters?
I think the movement has really suffered being a leaderless movement. So no leader could actually step up and ask the people to stop. No one has the legitimacy to do so. University administrators either does not have the legitimacy or are not willing to do so. The leaders from Umbrella Movement a couple of years ago don't have the legitimacy today. which is why we have quite a few radical protesters still doing, still being resolved and doing what they are doing. But, you know, I mean, I've seen reports of religious leaders going to PolyU campus and trying to mediate between the police and the protesters. But that's all we are seeing right now, some community leaders coming forward. But there's no one with kind of real legitimacy that could actually bring two sides together. I mean, really, ideally, what should happen is Hong Kong government should really step up and have a conversation with the protesters, right?
Well, you know, Beijing has already said no compromise. Is that correct?
Yes, but, you know, but no compromise doesn't mean that we cannot have a conversation. I mean, a conversation doesn't necessarily mean a compromise, but at least you can hear what the other side has to say.
Lynette Ong, a noted expert on China, a professor at the University of Toronto in Canada, thanks so much for your time and your information. Happening now in Asia, North Korea said Monday that while it views the U.S. decision to postpone joint military drills with South Korea as positive, the adoption of a U.N. resolution criticizing the North's human rights record has soured its desire to have denuclearization talks with Washington. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. There have been some protests around Australia after the alleged murder in police custody of an Aboriginal man by a police officer in the Northern Territory. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
19-year-old Kumanji Walker was shot dead in the remote indigenous settlement of Uendamu, 300 kilometres northwest of Alice Springs in central Australia. He died at the local police station after two police officers had tried to arrest him for parole breaches. Northern Territory police alleged the teenager had attacked the officers. There are reports the Aboriginal man was armed, possibly with a knife. But his family argues that unnecessary force was used and that the police should have used a taser, an electronic stun gun, to subdue him. The death sparked demonstrations in Alice Springs and Darwin, as well as in Sydney and Melbourne. Muji Sumner, an Indigenous elder, believes police stationed in Aboriginal settlements shouldn't be allowed to carry guns.
The police should be disarmed. If they've gone into communities, they need to take a taser with them. That's better than shooting them dead. You take guns to war. You don't take guns to a place where you're going to be friendly towards people. If people need guns to protect themselves, why not give us guns to protect ourselves?
The accused officer intends to plead not guilty, according to the police union. Walker is the second Aboriginal person to have died in the past 2 months after being shot by police. Joyce Clark, who was 29, was fatally wounded in Western Australia in September. Authorities say the investigation into her death is continuing. A royal commission in the late 1980s investigated Aboriginal deaths in custody over a 10-year period, but few of the inquiry's 330 recommendations were implemented. In 2017, prominent Indigenous rights campaigner Noel Pearson said that Aboriginal Australians were the most incarcerated people on planet Earth. Official figures released in September show that Aboriginal prisoners represented 28% of the total full-time adult inmate population in Australia. The nation's original inhabitants make up just over 3% of the Australian population. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming your way, a big shortage of a favorite fruit in India. We'll tell you why. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
A news alert from VOA Asia. More international students come to the United States from around the world for higher education than any other country, but those metrics show stagnation and steep declines from some countries led by China for the second year after decades of growth, according to a new study. You're listening to VOA Asia. Almost 70% of India's apple supply comes from the federally administered regions of Jammu and Kashmir, but the lockdown of that region since August has badly hurt the industry. More from VOA's Ritul Joshi in Kashmir.
The wholesale fruits and vegetables market at Parimpura in Srinagar looks deserted, even though it's peak apple season. That's because wholesale markets in Kashmir have shut down in protest after the Indian government changed its constitutional status.
There are around 350 shops here, which employ nearly 7,500 people. Everything has been closed for the few 2 months. You can see for yourself how much loss we have incurred.
Article 370 of the Indian Constitution gave a special status to Jammu and Kashmir. And since its abrogation in August, the region has been hit economically. Phone and internet were suspended for days, and travel in the region was hampered.
We are not able to visit our orchards, and those living in the villages are not able to sell their produce because the wholesale markets are closed. Because of the situation, the buyers are also not coming here.
The apple trade is worth an estimated $1.6 billion to the region annually. But this year, farmers have gathered less than 10% of the normal harvest. To help, the Indian government stepped in with a plan to buy apples directly from the farmers.
Additional facility government initially
provided. The government provided additional facility to the growers to ensure they do not incur losses. We are also facilitating transportation of apples outside the state as well.
But the farmers say the price the government is offering is too low.
Even if a couple of apples in the consignment fall short of prescribed specifications, they downgrade it to a lower category. With those standards, they should be paying us $1.3 for a pound.
The government says it followed last year's trends in establishing the prices.
Previous year's rates.
We have a record of previous year's rates for all the three grades. We took those rates as the base price and hiked them by 5% before notifying them.
In Baramulla, the largest apple-producing district in Kashmir, most orchard owners say it is too late to turn to the government as their main buyer. They say their contracts with their original buyers were inked before harvesting.
We have been in this business for 35 years. We have given our word to buyers from Delhi and Kolkata. We will not betray their trust.
The apple season comes to an end in December, and the full extent of the economic damage won't be truly known until then. Ritul Joshi, VOA News, Srinagar.
Now this news break from VOA Asia. The Trump administration Monday issued a new 90-day extension allowing U.S. companies to continue doing business with China's Huawei Technologies company as U.S. regulators continue crafting rules on telecommunications firms that pose what they say as national security risks. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA. New research has found that U.S. agriculture uses child workers without proper training and care for their safety. The report published last week in the American Journal of Industrial Medicine says 33 children are injured every day while working on U.S. farms, and more child workers die in agriculture than in any other industry. VOA's Lada Tahok reports rights groups are blaming loopholes in U.S. laws for failing to protect child workers in agriculture.
Child labor is exploited around the world, and the United States is no exception. Children as young as 10 get hired to work on U.S. farms. They get paid less than adult workers and are pressured to produce more than is reasonable for their age, often working long hours in heat or rain. They are also exposed to pesticides and can get dehydrated without being aware of it.
When it's wet in the mornings, we wear trash bags. But throughout, like around 10 or 11, it starts getting really, really hot. So, like, since the trash bags attract heat, you're, like, just, like, burning inside the the trash bags, and you're just like, oh, I want to take them off.
For children working in tobacco fields, there is additional health hazard from the nicotine.
When you're on the morning, you could get sick just by the smell of it.
Human Rights Watch has long pushed for a bill that would ban people younger than 18 from working in the tobacco industry.
When kids are out in the fields handling those plants, whether they're harvesting, whether they're picking leaves, topping the plants, they can actually absorb that nicotine through their skin, and it makes them sick. It causes acute nicotine poisoning.
Margaret Worth, children rights researcher at Human Rights Watch, says children working in U.S. agriculture in general are not protected by law as are children working in other industries.
A loophole in our U.S. labor law means that today, in 2019, it's perfectly legal for children as young as 12 to work unlimited hours on big commercial farms, doing very hard work, and often putting their health and safety at risk in the process.
Children born on U.S. farms traditionally start helping their family with farm work as soon as they can walk.
It's an excellent way to raise your children on a farm, teach them to work.
Steve Pratt is the head of Burley Tobacco Growers, an almost a century-old co-op with members in five states. He told VOA in a telephone interview that Burley management requires its members to respect U.S. laws on child labor.
You know, our policy basically is that we support state and federal child labor laws. So we want to make sure that we're all legal, and we encourage our farmers to do that, to prevent underage children from working in hazardous occupations there.
But children's rights activists say U.S. laws for using child labor in agriculture are too lax and are pushing for more protective measures. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA Asia. The U.S. Senate has passed a bill that makes animal cruelty a federal felony. The so-called PACT, Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture Act, was approved unanimously. More from VOA's Maxim Maskalkiv.
The bill passed in the U.S. Senate makes animal cruelty a federal felony, punishable by fines and up to 7 years in prison. Until recently, the federal law only banned animal fighting and criminalized cruelty towards animals solely if the act was recorded on camera for purposes of selling the video. Yet, it never explicitly banned the acts of torture themselves. Though all 50 states have laws regarding animal cruelty, such an all-encompassing federal law would be the first in the country's history. Animal rights advocates welcome the change, among them the Humane Rescue Alliance, one of the largest such organizations in the United States.
So the PACT Act gives federal law enforcement the tools necessary to pursue egregious acts of animal cruelty. And here in the district, oftentimes cases can affect interstate commerce because we're so close to the state lines of Virginia and Maryland. Our officers investigate thousands of cases of animal cruelty per year, and we have had cases where if this law had been in place, then proper justice would have been served.
The new measure will prohibit any conduct in which one or more living non-human mammals, birds, reptiles, or amphibians is purposely crushed, burned, drowned, suffocated, impaled, or otherwise subjected to serious bodily injury. The perpetrators will be held criminally liable. According to the FBI, animal cruelty is linked to violent crimes against human beings as well. It was only in 2016 that the FBI started to keep records of all animal cruelty acts, and representatives of the Humane Rescue Alliance believe thousands of such acts of cruelty take place every year. However, not everyone is happy with the bill. Many believe there are still many loopholes that can be used by perpetrators.
The only thing that disappoints me is it's become customary to include waivers or exemptions under these acts for such things as agricultural husbandry and hunting and science and even slaughtering animals for food.
The next step is for President Trump to sign the PACT Act into law. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast to take VOA Asia with you. Also, our thanks to our radio affiliates, including Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines, Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand, and CCU Radio at the National Chung Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, and our managing editor, Diane Gao, and, of course, our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hai Young, Afra, and Candace. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.